Hey friends, welcome to another episode of the Lucky Few podcast, where we are shifting the narrative by shouting the worth of people with Down syndrome. This is Heather, and my girls Micah and Mercedes are not here today, but you know what? We are going to be joined on this episode by the one and only Gail Williamson to chat about her career as a talent representative for actors with Down syndrome. I am so incredibly excited to get to chat with her about accessibility and representation in the media, as these things are so important to the Avis family. So thank you for joining us and welcome to the Lucky Few podcast. All right, listeners, friends, Gail Williamson is a hero. There, I said it. She's a hero. And she has foraged so many paths for our loved ones with Down syndrome, more than we could ever imagine. I'm excited for this conversation with her. But before we do that, I want to read another sweet review from one of you. So this is from Taylor Worden, who says, "So excited for what's in store. You are all an inspiration. Your positivity and awareness is so important in our world today. I have been blessed with knowing individuals with Down syndrome for some years now, and I cannot wait until the time is right to adopt. Your Instagram posts and stories give me hope. I can't wait to hear more." Taylor, thank you so much for leaving that very kind review, and thanks for listening. Friends, don't forget that you too can leave a review for the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast, so we can read it out loud on our next episode. We love reading these, and we really, 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 really appreciate your support. All right, friends, we're going to get straight to it. We're getting straight to it today. I am so unbelievably excited to chat with Gail Williamson. Gail works in the diversity department for KMR Talent Agency, focusing on clients with disabilities. She spent the last several years advocating for disability representation in the media and speaking across various stages, including our own. You might remember we had Gail as a special guest at our live event in November of 2019. It was one of my very favorite episodes we've ever done. We got to sit down and chat with her and some of her incredible actors that she represents who have Down syndrome. We are so excited to have her back for her own interview today. Gail, welcome to the Lucky Few podcast.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you? It's so nice to see you.
It's nice to see you. I love watching all the pictures of the kids on all the social media. It's fun.
It's fun. I know it's fun. I like it too. Gail Williamson, it is an honor and a privilege to have you on the show. I have to say again, because you joined us for our live event, which was recorded, so you technically are a returning guest. And I just admire you so much and what you've done in the Down syndrome space. I look up to you as a mother raising a child with Down syndrome. I look up to you as an advocate. I look up to you as a trailblazer, as someone in who sees the need for representation in the media. And so I know for some of our listeners, you will be a new voice and a new person. Would you give us an introduction, who you are? You can tell us as much. You can go back to your childhood, or you can start with your career. Whatever you want to tell us, tell us more about you.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say childhood, because I never include that really in interviews, but it was a unique childhood in that I was in school in the 50s and the 60s when really inclusion in the classrooms wasn't common. And yet I had that. I went to school with people with disabilities. I taught dance at recess in elementary school and had a little girl that was missing a hand. And I always made sure I was next to her because no one else wanted to hold her hand when we danced. I tutored a young man who was having epileptic seizures in his sleep. And I tutored him in math and reading when I was in fifth grade. And so people with disabilities were a part of my life. And oddly enough, one of my very close friends who lived down the street from me had a little brother with Down syndrome. And I knew Carrie was different. I never heard the words Down syndrome. I never heard any label put on Carrie, but I grew up with him. So I had an introduction to the world of disability very early on. I also had an uncle who was a quadriplegic mm-hmm. and had this amazing life where my aunt took him everywhere because they were on such a great schedule. And so, mm-hmm. so it was, I was fortunate to have that kind of inclusion in my life. But then, you know, as a young mother at 26, I had a baby with Down syndrome. And he took me on this incredible journey. I am now a talent agent at Gazzarian Majors Ruskin and Associates, where I head their diversity department. And we only work with talent with disabilities. Our mission to make images of positive images of people with differences and disabilities in the media, because it is the most wonderful teaching tool. People invited into their home every night. You don't have to ask them to read a book or a brochure or look up a website. It's just there in front of them. And I remember once hearing Sergeant Shriver talk about Special Olympics and say that it was the most successful march ever on Washington, and no one ever had to pick up a sign to march. Just everyone got involved and everyone knew what Special Olympics was. So if the legislature came across a desk that had to do with people with developmental disabilities, they understood who they were because they had had some kind of connection to Special Olympics. Mm-hmm. And I often go back to that statement for why I do what I do. So that's kind of who I am today. Was I supposed to talk about how I got here?
I mean, yeah. You absolutely can.
It was, wasn't I?
No, you talk about whatever you want. I would love to know how you got into the business, but also before that, if you can tell us a little bit more about your son, Blair, which I think leads
Blair.
To
oh.
how you got into yeah. the business. Yeah.
Well, Blair is now 41. He has had quite an acting career quite by accident. And he is a lovely man. I am blessed to have him. He lives at home with us. He tells me he's too independent for independent living. His friends who have independent living have people coming in their homes telling them what to do, and he does not want that.
That is interesting.
So he's got what we call the Blair Lair, two rooms at the back of the house. It's his bedroom and his office. And he's very independent and very loving and has a lot of friends, and I'm blessed to have him in my life. But when Blair was little, twice I had school psychologists say to me, "You ever thought about getting into acting?" I don't know anything about acting. So how would you do that? And where do you see anyone with Down syndrome? Come on. So that was, in fact, the second one that asked me, I said, "Did you read his file from the last psychologist, school psychologist?" She said, "No." And I said, because she said the same thing. So he had whatever has now come to be to me, whatever that extra spark is on the extra chromosome that makes them want to be entertainers, because it's there on many of them. It's not on a lot too, but parents will call me and start to tell me about their child, and I'll go, no, you can stop. I understand. I know what you're talking about. I've seen it. So when Blair was nine, he started running 400 meters in Special Olympics, which is around the typical track. And loved it, did it well. And we got a call from Special Olympics saying that there was a commercial audition for a little boy who could run the commercial. So they Blair went on the audition. We literally just went to a park in Santa Monica. He ran for the camera. We came home. And I said to my husband, I don't think this will happen for Blair because he runs very smooth. He doesn't have that back and forth flat-footed Down syndrome run that I saw a lot of the other kids have. So I just don't anticipate he'll get a call. So he went on a call back, had a great time, left so happy. I was pissed off. There were just a zillion people everywhere. They were doing all these commercials in the same place. And it was like a meat market to me. And what are we doing here? And I just wanted to leave. And he was just like, it was his world. He was so happy to be there. And he had such a good time. And they gave him a basketball and a trophy. And he left, you know, his things. He was so happy. So I said to my husband at that point, well, whatever happens, happens. But he, you know, he's happy. That's all that matters. So he did get cast in the commercial. They cast two children in it. There was a backup in case he didn't perform that day, which was interesting. And he did amazingly well. I mean, for 4 hours, he ran down the same hill over and over again for the 15 seconds of film that they use in the commercial of him running. And every time he ran down the hill, they sprayed his chest with water so he looked like he was sweating. And this was the October Santa Anas in the Malibu Mountains. And I thought, my kid's getting pneumonia. I'm the worst mother in the world. I am surely going to be punished and sent to hell for this. But he was so happy. And at the end of the day, his little feet hurt because he was not wearing his shoes, because his shoes had a big Nike swish on them. And they took little Reeboks and covered up the sign. So his feet were killing him. And he was sitting on the side of the road. And he looked like he was just dead to the world. And the director said, Blair, would you run one more time for me? And Blair just looked up at him like, oh, my God. He said, Blair, if you run one more time, I'll kiss your feet. So he ran to the top of the hill. He thought that was pretty cool. Ran down, did his thing, sat down on the curb again, head hanging, so exhausted. And the director goes, Blair, will you run one more time? And I look at the director and it's like, are you kidding me? I have pulled the last trick out of my bag of tricks.
Right.
What are you talking about? And the director said, Blair, if you run one more time, I'll kiss your feet. So Blair ran to the top of the hill and came running down. So he's probably the only actor in Hollywood that's literally had the director kiss his feet.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway, Blair had such a good time and did so well. And I thought, well, he should be able to do this again. And at the same time, Life Goes On, the show with Chris Burke, who played Corky, who had Down syndrome, was on the air. And I thought more children should be able to turn on TV and see people who look like themselves. So I went looking for an agent for Blair and didn't have any success at all. And I finally found the Media Access Office, which was part of the Employment Development Department in the state of California and part of the California Governor's Committee for Employment of People with Disabilities. And they had a casting liaison service where if someone casting was looking for someone with a disability, they could go to them to find them. So I thought, oh, here, I found it. You know, this is going to be my answer. And they said, oh, gee, no, we're funded to work with people 18 and older. You know, we don't work with children. Hmm. So after some conversation, I volunteered and developed a children's division for them, and then ended up spending 12 years with them doing advocacy with the entertainment industry. So eventually ended up at KMR. KMR had started a department to represent performers with disabilities while I was at the Media Access Office. But it never quite took off. Timing wasn't right, you know, that all of that. So in 2013, I sat down on the couch of Cindy Kazarian with my laptop and started working with maybe the 10 to 15 actors they still had with disabilities. In 2013, the actors collectively made a big $50,000. So that means I brought $5,000 to the agency. But in 2019, we had built our client list. And things had picked up, and the actors with disabilities at KMR in 2019 collectively made $3 million.
Wow.
So there has been a great difference. The timing's right and things are happening.
When did you start with KMR?
I started with KMR in 2013.
Okay. That was when you started in 2013.
Yeah.
So that's a huge change. This is a big question, but what are the biggest changes you've seen? And what do you attribute that to from 2013 to 2019, that huge difference?
I'm going to step you back just a little further. In 1991, that year when all the new TV shows came out, now the new TV shows came out on like 5 stations, you know, that was before we had streaming that we have today. But there was one person of color who was a series regular. So there was a big uproar in Hollywood, and the NAACP led a group of ethnically diverse groups in something called the Grand Coalition. What they accomplished was a VP level executive of diversity at all of the major studios. Well, at least this was their plan. It took a few years for them to get to every studio. ABC was first on, and I think CBS followed after that, and then soon after NBC and Fox. So that was kind of a beginning. but the LGBTQ community and the disability community were not invited to that table.
Okay.
We were not part of the Grand Coalition. So now it meant we were going to be working to get ourselves included in that diversity initiative, which eventually happened. Mm-hmm. The LGBTQ community made a giant leap well before the disability community. And I feel part of that is because they were in the executive offices, mm-hmm. in the studios, where people with disabilities were not in the executive offices at that time. So there was less understanding of that culture, mm-hmm. to bring it into the media. So bless the LGBTQ community. They threw us a rope. They have always been supportive of the disability community. They're glad report that they turn out every year counting LGBTQ characters. They include disability for us, mm-hmm. as long as they're doing it. So it's really helped. I think that our world is changing. I think that we now have people in executive offices who went to school with people with disabilities. I think culturally, you know, we've been taught don't look, don't ask questions, don't, you know, so we don't even see people with disabilities sometimes, mm-hmm. because we've been taught so, or at least my generation was taught not to look and not to stare, not to ask questions. Mm-hmm. I think the internet made a big difference.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
And I think because collectively we got together and we weren't necessarily before. I mean, when I had a child with Down syndrome, there were very few books. There was very few information. A parent group met in the basement of a church and had mimeographed pieces of paper with information on it. I mean, that was the support that you had.
Yeah.
So I think, in fact, if you watch the history of disability in the media, the deaf community moved forward faster. Mm-hmm. And I truly believe it has to do with the fact that they have a culture because they have multiple people in families sometimes who are deaf. Mm-hmm. It's like in a family with a child with Down syndrome, well, of course you are a, you,
right.
you have more than yeah. one.
Right. right.
Usually there's one.
Right.
You know, somebody in a wheelchair, there's one. And if you're going to take a family picture, let's get the person out of the wheelchair and set them on the couch and then take a picture.
Right.
You know, there
right.
wasn't any pride in who the individuals were. That wasn't being built in like it was in the deaf community.
Yeah.
They were proud of who they were and proud of their culture. And I think you would agree with me that Down syndrome is a culture.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, it is. We live in that culture. We all understand everybody else's culture who lives in it.
Yeah.
As parents, we talk in shorthand because
right.
we have an understanding. So that makes a culture to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that once collectively those of us parents of children with Down syndrome could get on the internet and find out more information and connect with one another on social media, people who were spinal injuries, I think that, and then we could make it known to the public beyond, you know, a friend of a friend on Facebook, and you're suddenly seeing mm-hmm. pictures of this guy. I have a kid in a wheelchair that, you know, drops into the empty swimming pool like a BMX rider on a bike. I mean, suddenly you can watch those videos and
right.
these people become human.
Yes.
So I think there's a lot of cultural reasons that it's all come together now. And then we've had so much concern about diversity mm. that the studios are, we actually get calls for casting where they go, where the casting office says, we have these two roles. One's a barista and one's a school counselor. Could you just give us some diverse options?
Mm.
That never happened before. You know, you
yeah.
had to look like a school counselor, whatever that was, and someone said, or the teenage barista, whatever that was.
Yeah.
You know, if I can hand him a guy who's missing an arm to be the barista, because his yeah. his prosthetic arm is going to do it just fine.
That's so interesting. I remember to that point when you or when we had the live event and something that you said that stuck out to me so much, we had asked the question, like, what do you think needs to happen moving forward? And you had said, we need more of those roles, like a barista, like a counselor, where people with disabilities are represented in every day, you know, not a special casting for disability, but just a person. I remember you saying that. So you're seeing that happening more.
Yes. People with disabilities, performers with disabilities want opportunities to play roles where their disability is not moving the story forward.
Yes.
You know, you can see the barista who has a prosthetic arm and know there's more story behind that, but it really doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Now, back when Blair was 14, so that would be, you know, in the, I can't do math this morning, in the mid 90s, I was in a meeting with some casting directors, and one was saying, there was a period of time where casting directors blamed producers and producers blamed casting directors whenever we had the opportunity to ask, why are you not using people with disabilities? So this casting director had said, you know, no one ever, agents don't send me people with disabilities. And I said, okay, so my son's agent sends you his headshot. You're looking for a, you're creating a family. You're looking for a Caucasian boy with brown hair and blue eyes for a family. And you get my son's picture and he's a Caucasian boy with brown hair and blue eyes and has Down syndrome. Would you see him for that role? And this casting director said, well, no, people would wonder why he was there. And I said, well, oh, and I don't know if I put that in, but it was a McDonald's commercial.
Okay.
So people would wonder why he's there. And I said, well, I take him to McDonald's when he's hungry. You know, it's like,
right.
But we had to get over that hump of, yeah, you know, if we're showing people shopping in the market and there's somebody in a wheelchair shopping, they're going to wonder why he's there. No, if somebody's in your market shopping, they're there because they need food. Mm-hmm. And you need to just get over that thinking it's going to propel the story. It doesn't have to. It just can be life.
Wow. Does it feel a little bit, as I'm hearing you talk, it's almost like the chicken and the egg, like what came first in propelling it forward? Because representation is huge. It matters. And knowing someone's story, having a connection to somebody who is fill in the blank, right? Has a disability, LGBTQ, someone who's different ethnicity, whatever it is, having that connection, whether it is in real life or through a screen, it propels you forward with that, within that community, to want more, to have more acceptance. And so as I'm hearing you talk, it's like, okay, how did we get here? Well, because of representation, but that's what we were after, right? Like, what led to what, you know?
And it's interesting what it does to the public, because like when I started out, I could walk into a restaurant, wear on my hip in 1979, 1980, and silence it, because children with Down syndrome were not out in public. I was in Universal Studios with Blair and a backpack on my back. And a woman said to me, I have one of those at home. I said, oh, a backpack? And she said, no, a baby like that. But I live in South Africa and we don't take them out in public.
Yeah.
So that was a different world. And then jumped to, I was out to lunch with Lauren Potter, who was on Glee, mm-hmm. played Becky Jackson on Glee. I was out to lunch with her and I saw three young ladies sprint across the parking lot, almost get killed, just to see Lauren, to take selfies with her, to talk to her. And I said to these three teen young adults, you know, do you know anyone with Down syndrome? Oh, no, I don't know anyone with Down syndrome. But they wanted to meet Lauren Potter, and they took their lives in their own hands. So it makes such a difference. And when the show Life Goes On came on the air, we noticed about two seasons in that people were treating Blair differently when we were out. Wow. Waiters would turn to him and ask what he would like to eat. So that was back with television when there were four or five channels. And so if you didn't even watch the show, you at least saw the commercials for it. Mm. So the whole world was taught they could talk to the face with Down syndrome after seeing Chris Clark on TV. And by the way, I have to say, I was on a Zoom with Chris the other day, for the people who know him. It was his 55th birthday, and it was with a lot of the cast and crew from Life Goes On. And Chris was just so happy to see everybody and telling stories. And it was just wonderful to see him. He's living in a senior living apartment in New York.
Wow.
It was just so cool to see him and spend a little time with him.
That's so cool. And I bet, especially for you, like he was so critical for Blair. It's telling the story you're telling, like that, how much what he did created that path for you guys.
It did. And then when he was on Touched by an Angel, I was his dialogue coach. I was there with him every step of the way. I had a rental car, he didn't, so every night after work, okay, Gail, where are we going? So he is a friend.
Yes, that is really special. That's so great. So it's 2021, and we've talked a little bit about how things have changed so much. Where do you see the disability space in media right now? And what do you see are the biggest obstacles for people with Down syndrome getting into acting and getting into the media?
Well, I'll say that, you know, we get 2 or 3 calls a month specifically for someone with Down syndrome. Of course, that could be a child, that could be, you know, it's not like everyone with Down syndrome is going to get to audition for that role.
Sure.
It could be they're looking for, you know, 7 to 10-year-old boy or a 40 to 45-year-old man or something. But anyway, the biggest obstacle is location.
Talk about that some more. Yeah.
All over the United States who want to be actors, and that's lovely. But I look at breakdowns in Los Angeles and New York.
Yeah.
That's what I get, because that's what we have addresses for. Mm-hmm. As agents, I can't get the breakdowns for the Midwest. Mm-hmm. I can't get, you know, they're going to need to find local representation. And I know that's hard.
Yeah.
Everybody wants us to be, everybody says, I'll get on a plane. You know, no, I'll get on a plane. It's not about the money. I'll spend it. It's, you know, but it's still, it happens so fast.
It happens so fast.
You don't have time to get on a plane.
No.
You don't. It's, you know, so you're going to get on a plane to be out here for an audition tomorrow.
Right.
And then we don't know if you get the job. And then they do a callback in 5 days and they want mm-hmm. to see you again. And then maybe you get the job and that's 10 mm-hmm. days later. You know, it's fast, but it's spread out.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, and you could be, literally it could be you know, audition and you go. And then COVID has made it all different.
Oh, again. Yeah.
You know, everything's done right now on a tape. So it's somebody in the Midwest going, well, I can just tape an audition and send it to you. That's great. But then if they want to see you tomorrow, you know, that's going to be tough.
Yeah. So,
and right now, my gosh, with COVID, we have people COVID testing over and over again before they go to work, you know?
Yeah.
So, and we have a fella get stuck in Pennsylvania trying to get to New York in time for his COVID test so he could work.
Mm.
You know, and the snowstorm and the COVID. And
oh my gosh.
Oh, it's yesterday for poor Lindsay who works with me. She was like insane trying to get this guy to New York. It was just nuts. So mom and dad, when you say, oh, it's okay, we'll go anywhere for our child, please understand that that's not really realistic. If someone has like credits, like they've done something in the past that we can point to, and they live in the Midwest, we will put them in our files as long as they understand that they're only going to hear from us when it's a Down syndrome role and they're willing to look nationally,
mm-hmm.
because we're not going to submit them on stuff daily. It goes mm-hmm. too fast.
Yeah, but you even look at like old time movies and people who dream of being actors and actresses, and just in real life, that then you have to move to LA, right? Like that's what people do. They move from the Midwest, they get their job waitressing or whatever the like classic storyline is. So of course it would be the same for a person with Down syndrome or disability. If you want to be an actor, you got to go where the gigs are, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you certainly could, you know, if you could find someone to represent you, if you're in Chicago or somewhere like that, and you want to find someone to represent you, and you could, you know, make that happen. I always tell people, if you're in another state besides, if you're in another city besides LA or New York, and you want to be an actor, sign up for their local background casting company. Because when a movie comes to your town, mm-hmm. maybe you can go be part of the, you know, cast who are, you know, at the parade or, you know, in the basketball game. I mean, do that. Then at least you're somewhere where you can be found in your community.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's good advice.
Yeah, but. Yeah, it's really hard to pick up a bunch of people. So suddenly I have 12 people in the Midwest and now they're all contacting me constantly asking me, well, is there work? Is there, you know, and it's like, no, there's not.
Mm-hmm.
And we work so hard, such long hours every day that having those extra calls just are overwhelming, or those extra emails.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. I know We've done a little bit here and there. Our family has, and our kids have, and we're an hour east of LA. And even that, I'm like, it's too far.
It's too far.
And because it is, you
can
go.
Can you be here at 3?
Exactly.
You know, and like, you're like, oh my God, I got to get the kids from school. And
totally.
I got, you know, and they're crusty. And
they're crusty. And I'm begging them, please just brush your hair. And then you get there and you're literally 10 minutes and then you're done.
Yep.
And it's such a, I'm sounding like such a downer here, but, and no. Then it's, you're up against so many people and that's the job, you know? And so a lot of times it's your 10 minutes, your hour drive, 10 minutes there, hour back, the whole thing is so stressful. And then you don't get called back, or you do, and then you go back, same thing. And then you don't get it. That's the gig. I think people kind of glamorize it, you know, and even the things that we've got to do as a family that have been so exciting, it's hard work. It's hard work and it's tedious and it's exhausting.
And it's repetitive.
It's repetitive. And, you know, I'm sound like I'm complaining. And at the end of the day, I love it. But you have to know that, right? Like you have to know that you're going to love it and your kids have to love it. Like you can't force them to do it.
No. And I think a lot of us in the Down syndrome community love it because we see the advocacy of it.
Totally.
We're not. Now, some of it can be that need for a parent to have their child succeed at something, you know, and if this is what your child's going to succeed at, there's a double thing. One, the child is pleased if they're succeeding. And one, you are feeling as though you helped your child get to where they need to be. Mm-hmm. But it's damn hard. It rips up your life. I mean, we got a cute little boy, just a job on a show. Deaf boy to just, you know, pop in and pop out. Well, now he's recurring. And the parents are like, oh my God, when is this going to end? You know, they keep ripping their lives apart.
Yeah.
In fact, oh, here's a great Down syndrome story.
Okay.
Years ago, John Wells called, who's ER, he's creator, executive producer of ER, of Shameless, calls for Shameless and he goes, Gail, I need a baby with Down syndrome for Shameless. He goes, people are going to remain shameless. They are not going to. That's what the show is.
Right.
So you need to know what you're getting into. But I grew up with a baby, with a little boy with Down syndrome on my block, and I want to show how it can even affect shameless people to have a child with Down syndrome. Oh, and by the way, it's going to have a birthing scene and it has to be Asian. So now I have to find an Asian baby for a birthing scene with Down syndrome who wants to.
Right.
Go do this. So we finally found a family that would do it, but they were not in love with it. And then they hired all their babies as background performers so they didn't have to pay them on the down days between shooting because they could only be on so many. So this is the only baby in the world probably who ever did background work and got day player fee, because I got her the day player fee. I got them a car service that picked them up at the house and brought them to work. I got them their own trailer, all for a background role. And all we kept asking was, when will you write them out? When will you write them out? Second season, when will you write them out?
Oh, that's so good. That's so good. And getting that car, man, if someone got me a car, I'll do anything. Like someone's going to pick me up, take me home in
Isn't
LA.
Lovely.
I will do it. That's so good. What are some stories that really stand out to you in terms of representation or proudest moments? I know I'm putting you on the spot here. What are proudest moments? It could be with Blair. It could be with any of your clients.
Okay. One of my proudest moments with Blair was with a Macy's commercial. He had just found an agent. He was 12 years old. And they were looking for real kids for real clothes. And I think they had asked for a deaf child. And this agent just went, you know what? I have a kid with a disability. Here's Down syndrome. And right off his picture, he got hired for the commercial. And he showed up that day. And Blair plays with flags. He always has. Mm-hmm. He has two checkered flags and he waves them. As an adult, this is how he does his self-talk. As a child, this was just what he did. And it might have to do partly with his vision and all, but the checkered flags mean something to him. And he showed up with the checkered flags and he was waving them. And pretty soon he had all the kids running. He's going, on your mark, get set, go, and running the flag. And all the kids are running. And they literally reset the cameras to that. And that's what's in the commercial.
Wow.
Blair basically created the commercial. I have a picture of him talking with the director. The director would call him over and have a conversation with him. Oh, it was just the cutest thing. Blair would go back and throw down the flag and all the kids would run. And so he ended up being a leader in a group of kids. You know, who would think the kid with Down syndrome that shows up would be the leader? I also remember they put him in overalls and some of the kids were just kind of preppy. And he went to the costume lady and said, I look like a dweeb and everybody else looks nice. So she unbuckled his overalls on one side and she said, now you look cool. And
then he was fine.
But so that was a very proud moment. Another proud moment is what we've done at KMR. When we first started, there were very few calls for children with disabilities for commercials. And anytime we saw one, we just threw in the kids in the wheelchairs, kids with Down syndrome. And now when there's commercials, quite often there's a kids with disabilities breakdown that comes out. And I think it's a little of, if you build it, we will come. Mm-hmm. I think we created that in some way, or we at least encouraged that because they found that the talent was there. And that's just a really proud moment too.
Yeah, I would say you created that and should receive many accolades and applause for that. And it's interesting, I have in books and media and everything, I've always been highly aware of who is there and who is not, who is represented and who is not, even before having kids with disabilities. And it's exciting to see that most spaces, advertisements and commercials and shows, and that there is a space for disability. You're seeing disability more and more. That feels exciting. But also we're still at a place where it feels exciting. And when does it just become normal? You know what I mean? Like, is it just that someday it just is? And so it's less exciting because of course that's happening. Not, oh my gosh, isn't this, this is the exception.
There was a time where I used to cut out every picture in the Target ads that had a kid with a disability and take a picture of it and post it on social media. And I don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is a good thing.
Yeah.
We've come to that point that, oh yeah, look, there's so-and-so. That's fun.
Yeah, exactly. I know them. That's exciting.
I was going to say, or the greatest joy, I don't know them.
That means
other people are doing it.
That's good.
And, you know, I've often said, I want my department to go away. I want everybody to be fully included everywhere. Mm-hmm. So when I see a kid that I don't know, you know, people go, oh, are you jealous? I'm like, are you kidding? I'm excited. That means I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm creating a world where, you know, everybody's getting an opportunity.
That's so interesting to think about that there aren't specialized departments for disability, but rather every talent agency is just representing all kinds of people.
That would be amazing. You know? And the thing right now is there's power in the numbers. We get opportunities for our clients that don't go everywhere because we have so many. If somebody does not want to get a bunch of people submitted for a role that, oh, he could sit in a wheelchair, they'll come to us and just say, let us see your guys in wheelchairs. And literally I turn into the Macy's Santa at that point. I go, oh wait, but there's this other person in a wheelchair at another agency, you need to find so and so. I want the right person for the job, and I want to share who's out there with casting.
I love that. Okay, we're gonna bring our conversation to a close here soon, but I would love to know what's going on with Blair right now.
Well, as you know, Blair's 41, has Down syndrome. Has had a fun little acting career. You can find him on IMDb and look up some of his shows if you want to try to find him on CSI or Nip Tuck or Scrubs or ER, one of those. But it is an interesting time right now. Blair has dated the same lovely woman with Down syndrome for almost 17 years. And Susie was 12 years his senior. She would be turning 54 this month. And Susie has been dealing with Alzheimer's, which all of our brains will age that way. But genetically, where are we set for it to happen? and people with Down syndrome are set a little earlier than the rest of us. And Susie's Alzheimer's complications got worse, and we lost her here in January. So Blair lost the love of his life on January 18th. He got to go see her the day before she passed away. She was on morphine. She was on oxygen. She was unconscious. He crawled into bed with her, hugged on her a while. Then he sat up and started singing songs to her that were important to them. He found them on his phone and would sing them. He was singing, "We Are the Champions," and "We'll Go on Fighting Till the End." I was just...
Oh, gosh. Yeah,
it was just, nobody's ever done it better. You know, he just did it. Wow. And that we came home that night. She passed in the morning when I told him. He said, "I know. She came to me. Her spirit lives in me. And she told me to be happy and to smile more." And so this was just an amazing little journey. And we're still on it. He's still processing. And his friends are processing. And we have a ways to go, not having the minutiae of life in his brain that you and I have. He's able to really concentrate on what's happening. He's cut out lots of pictures of her in his journal. He's getting rid of things that aren't important for him. He's kind of purging his room, not of Susie's stuff, but of things that just don't really matter. It's like he has a new sense of what's important in life.
I've always felt, in my experience with my kids who have Down syndrome and then others I've interacted with, that there is a sense of knowing that I'm not in touch with.
Yeah.
And
when you listen to them pray.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh my God. They're best friends with God.
Totally. Totally. It's like just another reason to make sure that they're in every space in the world. Like how desperately the world needs people with Down syndrome, I think. Yeah. I know my life has been rocked. I had a moment with Macy. We're in adolescence. So she's going to be 13 in June. God bless. And it's just been a real challenge. And I talk to my friends whose kids don't have Down syndrome and they're going through adolescence. And I'll like have a vent session. They're like, "Yeah, it sounds like adolescence." I'm like, "I know, but there's all these layers." But we had a moment that I actually can't even remember right now where the details of it, but it was a moment where she was acting in a way that I feel like is not her best version of herself. And we were interacting with someone who has not interacted with anyone with Down syndrome before. And it was like, I felt like she was feeding into the negative stereotypes that people who aren't familiar with Down syndrome would associate with Down syndrome. And I was feeling frustrated by that. And then I remembered and went back and apologized to her. Even I didn't react negatively to her. I just had to, like, from my internal struggle, apologize to her, because the thing she's taught me more than anything is that there's not a right way to have worth. You just have worth. And so when she's responding in a way that I feel like, can you not be so stereotypical negative aspects of Down syndrome? It's like, whoa, 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 that's not a thing. And that's what she's taught me. And I still have to go back to that, you know, like moments of, this has been the honor of getting to raise her so far for me and my son, August, is that seeing the inherent worth and value in human beings, not if and because, just period.
And it's all because they're human.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, our guys show it in the moment.
Yes.
And we have to be prepared for that.
We sure do. Okay, this isn't
they're not going to wait till later.
Oh, right. Oh, gosh, it's so true.
We have sad moments, but we have good days.
Yeah.
But if anybody wants to see Blair and Susie's story, there's a beautiful little 5-minute documentary that was made for the Easter Seals Disability Film Challenge called Honey Bunny, because that's what Blair called her. If you look up Easter Seals Honey Bunny, it'll pop up on any Google search and you can see their story. And it's quite lovely. It's the interviews were taken on March 15th. And then everything closed down on March 16th for COVID.
Oh, gosh. So it was done just a year ago.
Yeah. So there's flashbacks
Wow.
to them in when their younger days, when she's vivacious and strong. And then there's this last year of them.
Wow.
We're really lucky to have this.
I was going to say that is so special, the timing of it.
And it came about so interestingly. A friend of mine who has a brother with Down syndrome who put Blair in a movie years ago, her son, who was 13, needed to make a project for school, and he did the interviews. Mm. And then another friend came to me and said, for the Easter Seals Film Challenge, I want to make Blair and Susie's story because I have so much footage of them over the years. And I said, wait, you need to talk to Jaden. So this 13-year-old was our director.
That's cool. Piece.
And anyway, it's just a lovely little piece of their life. And then if you want something a little more lighthearted on Amazon Prime, Turnover is a cute little film that Blair's in. And Jamie Brewer from American Horror mm-hmm. Story, the two of them are a couple in that film. And it's quite cute. But anyway, we have this special moment on Honey Bunny for Blair and Susie, and we're just blessed to have it.
I love that. We'll have links in on our website and in our show notes to all the things that Gil's mentioned. Gil, thanks for sharing that. That's really, it feels like an honor to hear you share about Blair and his experience. And we're so sorry for your loss, and just send him all the love from me, from us here at the podcast.
Oh, I certainly will.
Yeah. And can you, before we sign out here, let our listeners know other ways that they can follow along?
You know, it's funny. I'm on Instagram as KMR Gail. Facebook, I'm Gil Ford Williamson. It's pretty open to the world. But if you need to know or want to know more about what I do and who I am, if you just Google Gail Williamson disability, you'll have a lot of reading ahead of you.
Cool. Good. And I encourage you.
I'm not sure how much all of it is true. You know, sometimes things aren't, you know what the press does to things.
Yes. Well, if it's not good, it's probably not true, because you are just, yes. And you really are, Gail, such a gift to this community. And I don't think people realize how much you've done. And you're so humble in spirit. And even hearing you say, like, how you don't even want it, you're excited when you see people represented that aren't represented by you. You don't function out of scarcity. And I think that that is why you've been able to create such beautiful paths for our community. And I just applaud you and thank you for all the work that you've done within media and how that has affected every single one of us. It has affected us more than we'll ever know in the best ways for our kids, and that you are still going. And we say to our listeners, you know, just keep on keeping on in that regard. Just keep showing up. Your kid's face does not need to be on the television. Like you shared, Gil, you know, you take your kid to the restaurant and that's representation, and you take your kid to the zoo and that's representation. Absolutely. And just keep showing up with your kid, allowing them to be exactly who they are, because they are magic. They are pure magic. So Gail Williamson, you are a queen, and I am so grateful.
Thank you so much. This has been wonderful.
So thanks for coming on the show. And thank you everybody for listening in and joining us. As always, we love to hear from you. You can leave us a voicemail, or you can leave us a direct message on Instagram and share about your family. And you can share some good news there as well about your loved one with Down syndrome. If you have a product or a business that wants to help us shout the worth of people with Down syndrome, then we'd also love to partner with you. You can email hello@theluckyfewpodcast.com for any sponsorship opportunities. A huge thank you to our editor, Josh Avis, our producer, Val Schleter, and our sponsor, and to all of you who share the Lucky Few podcast with your friends and family. All of you who listen faithfully and have cheered us on, please don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember that you are a dear listener supporting your loved one with Down syndrome, or if you are a listener with Down syndrome, you are a shouter of worth and you are a narrative shifter. So keep on keeping on. We are here cheering for you. We will be together next week on the Lucky Few podcast. Hi friends, Heather here. So we launched a thing called This is Down Syndrome. It is a global movement to shift the Down Syndrome narrative. With storytelling and relationship at its core, This is Down Syndrome will offer an expansive, relatable, and transformative look into what it really means to live with Down Syndrome So through powerful images and bite-sized engaging stories, we will show a variety of aspects of living with Down syndrome. We will do this by photographing and highlighting not only people who have Down syndrome, but their parents, siblings, grandparents, extended family members, friends, anybody connected to a person with Down syndrome. We want to tell your stories. You can go to thisisdownsyndrome.com or on Instagram, we are this.is.down.syndrome to learn more.